Welcome to another episode of 3PL Live. I'm your host, Jeremy Thone. Today, I'm thrilled to present a conversation with the dynamic Grace Sharkey of FreightWaves. Not only is Grace a talented writer for FreightWaves, but she also has her own radio show for SiriusXM. In this episode, we talk about how Kevin Hill offered her the show and she only had to decide over the weekend if she wanted to do it. Seems like a lot of pressure, but she pulled it off. We also get into the art of public speaking as she usually has to talk in front of big crowds at FreightWaves. She shares insights from her own experiences, being in the spotlight and moderating panels. Grace is definitely a beacon of inspiration and good energy in our industry. Hope you enjoy this episode. Hey, Grace, thanks for coming on to 3PL Live. I'm excited to speak to you. I see you all over the LinkedIn universe with, you're on all sorts of shows. You have your own show on Sirius. I see you all the time on FreightWaves. So you're definitely out and about. So for those that for some reason haven't seen you, would you mind introducing yourself and what you do?
Yeah, I guess if you could say, what do I do? I'm a content creator, a freight tech nerd in this space. I work at freightwaves.com. My main objective is to cover freight technology news within our space. Of course, that involves really working with investors in the space as well and seeing what technology is popular these days. My side job on top of that is to, of course, create wonderful content at FreightWaves. I have a female-focused Great Quarter Gals show with Kaylee Nix. I also do the SiriusXM show. That one always comes last, even though I do that every single day. I don't know why I list it last.
Yeah. Interesting.
I'm always like, oh, that's right. Also the radio show that I do every single day, Monday through Friday on SiriusXM. That's a more of a, you know, if you're a fan of the Road Dog channel, it's a talk show, business focused in particular. FreightWaves news is something that drives the content there on that show. So yeah, I got my hands in all types of freight content and exploration overall.
I love it. Yeah, I actually read one of your articles yesterday. I was looking over Parade, getting, they're one of our partners for our TMS, and noticed they got a fresh round of funding and you had written the article. So is it a lot of stuff like that you're writing on FreightWaves, just like VC money and people getting investments and just anything in the industry? Is that kind of the idea there for that, the written stuff?
Exactly. Actually, it's funny too, because in my past brokerage life, I use Parade. So what's really fun is I love being able to kind of have this insider look, right? Like the user look of how a lot of this technology works. A lot of people in our space and particularly, I mean, just overall commenting on technology these days that I've never used this technology in the field. That's where I really pride myself on my work, is trying to help people understand what technology I'm reporting on that could be useful to them, what might be maybe too advanced for them at a certain point of time, and really help people understand what's out there, what's available, and maybe something that could be a powerful tool for their office as well.
Yeah, it's funny because I used to, not me, but my dad used to own a freight brokerage. Like, he's since retired, but he owned one like 25 years ago. He started like an LTL shop and they had like all these different rates coming in through like a rating engine and everything. And it was interesting because like, I remember telling him about Parade, and he's since like retired, like I mentioned, but he was just like, I don't understand how that works. Like, how's that possible that like these trucks are like algorithmically like routed and like the Uberization almost of like the freight market or something. And he just didn't get it. He's like, I don't understand. Where does the data come from? How does it work? It was just like a almost like magic. I feel like some of these new platforms coming out, like green screens and Parade, and it just seemed like, just like, how is that possible compared to how they were, I guess, just not long ago.
Right. And it's, you know, it's interesting because I think there's a lot of people that are like your dad, where they don't understand how it works. So they don't trust it as well. And that's where, you know, I really try to kind of open that up and help people understand kind of, it's kind of like, you know, add data, right? Like, you, I'm sure we've all been in that spot where you open up your phone and you're on Facebook or Instagram or something, and you're like, wow, like, how did that ad know I was just at McDonald's yesterday?
Right? It's like, it's freaky.
But it's the same thing here, right? It's like, showcasing people where a lot of these tools get that power from and how you can contribute to it to make that tool even more powerful for your organization, right? I love that your dad thinks that way, because I think there's still a lot of people left in this industry, and that's what's keeping my job, right?
Yeah, it's fascinating. So tell me a little bit about like podcasting, because I mean, I'm a podcast fan. I love podcasting. I've definitely had many conversations though with like executives in the past, like where's the ROI? Where does it come from? Is this a waste of time? Yada, yada, yada. And to me, like I think it's not a waste of time. I think it's like a way of like getting deeper into someone's, like, you know, you can't necessarily wash your dishes while you're reading a LinkedIn article, for example, or like while you're driving on PCH or whatever it might be. So yeah. I'm just like wondering, like, I think that a lot of executives don't really give podcasting and video content like the place it deserves on like kind of like the marketing schedule, if you will. But like, I would just love to hear your thoughts on it. Like for those that don't necessarily believe in it, or that my dad, for example, is the same way. He's like, where's the ROI? And like, how does that one podcast episode tie back to like the overall revenue of the company? I'm like, it doesn't work that way. It's more of, you need to be in front of these people and in many different way areas as possible. And then over time, they'll start understanding your narrative, the way you work, and then you'll sort of become like part of like the overall fabric. That's the way I view it. But I don't think a lot of executives view podcasting as like a necessity. They view it as like an afterthought.
I'm going to actually say that my past work, right, in 3PL and it's just a brief background. I, right out of college, joined a startup. It was two of us at the time, and we grew that business up to about 100 employees, $80 million by the time I left. And I was your dad. I was exactly, I really did not see how this type of marketing could be useful and could be helpful. And actually, the more time I spent in it, it's really started to click for me how important it actually is. I mean, one, we've become such a visual society in general. I think reading, right? If I have to read something, it's got to be short, right? And concise. I think
sure.
It's hard. It's hard to explain frame problems in a short and concise way.
Oh, absolutely.
And, you know, it's like every single day there's something different and weird that's happening that could relate to maybe the values or the assets and the solutions that your brokerage or your company can give back to the logistics field. And I think one, it's everyone loves podcasts. And what's interesting too is like, I think the ROI and like even what you're saying with people pushing back on it is that they just don't think that content would be interesting to someone. When's the last time that you asked someone their favorite podcast and it was 100% a podcast that you listened to? People listen to all types of stuff. And that's like, my top five is probably going to be different than your top five, different from someone else's. And so you shouldn't think about the audience aspect. I think it's more of the authenticity and how you're driving the content and the guest and the actual product that you're bringing to the table. Here's like a perfect example, right? We're going to sit here for 40 minutes or so, talk about a number of different issues. Someone might listen to the whole thing and that might click with them, but also as a marketing opportunity, I'm sure you know, right? You can clip that into, I mean, 40 minutes of content. You could clip into 40 different segments and those be 40 different situations that your brokerage or your company in this space has helped a customer to think about, you know, where else could you put 40 minutes in and come out with 40 different deliverables is very difficult to find, right?
That's a good point.
So I think it's about creating content, getting people to know you as a business, as the people behind the business. I mean, I don't know what other type of industry sits here, right, and says, no, we have the human aspect. We have to consider the human aspect. Well, put that human aspect on film and get that out to your customers. And you're right. I mean, the products that I think about that I am most loyal to in my life as a consumer, not only have I seen maybe an ad for them, but I've seen the product placement on TV. I've seen it in different areas where I've grown to trust those brands. And I think that's the same thing when it comes to utilizing any visual component or podcasting component, is allowing you to get in front of different people and gain that loyalty through, you know, just human interaction. And there's plenty of companies out there that I see doing this now today, where it only takes an hour of your time a week to sit back, have an honest discussion about not just exactly like you don't have to sell yourself, but even just talking about like having a carrier rep and a sales rep go back and forth on solving an issue, like that right there could be really great content to showcase to people how you solve problems using the humans, right, in your four walls. So I just think it's overwhelmingly not considered a incredible marketing tool. And I see more and more people get into it. And I think sometimes people have asked me, like, do you think there's too many podcasts out there? And like, again, no, I say, as long as you're driving good content and you're reaching an audience, like this is a easy tool to build trust within your community and your customers.
And that's totally fair. I love everything that you said there. And I also think that like all the experience that I've had, like me and you chatting right here and chatting with all these other different people, some folks over at Parade or Cargo Chief or whatever, Triumph Pay, all these different folks, you end up learning so much more. Like if I were to sit in my own four walls and only learn from the information that I could see on their website or like just like online, I'm not going to learn as much. So me being like the host and the producer, it's awesome because I end up getting to learn so much more like ahead of time. Like I remember actually learning about Parade from Adam Robinson maybe like 2 years ago, like when he was telling me about it, because he was like working with them. So I feel like it's like this networking effect too. I feel like where you're networking and you're also like learning a lot more knowledge and getting a lot more deep in some areas that you wouldn't normally be able to talk deep on, you know, because a lot of times I feel like, to your point earlier, a lot of times we're just scrolling and we might only read the first sentence of a post or whatever. So I think that people, when they realize that it's good content, they're more willing to sit with it because they know they're not being sold something. They just realize it's like an interesting conversation between two people.
1,000%. I love being able to learn more about the leadership behind companies and the, values that those individuals have. So it's not just about, you know, making these experiences about freight 100% of the time, but even sports season right now, right? Like who's your favorite teams? Like what's your fantasy? How bad is your fantasy team doing right now? Right? Like that kind of stuff, it connects people. And I know that there's going to be some type of customer out there who's going to hear that and say, reach out and say, hey, you know, I it's sad to see Aaron Rodgers down for the count. I'm a Jets fan too. And be able to make that connection and grow. I think that's where you see really good business, right? Especially in this space, is that organic growth through just connections and networking, like you said. So I tell everyone, try dabbling in it. Like worst case, you succeed. It's like, it's not, you're rarely going to have a time, I think, unless you just have the most boring individuals doing it. But God, this industry is just so incredibly interesting that people ask me all the time, like, how do you find content? It's like, sometimes I don't even have time to get to all the content I hope to touch them. So yeah, it self creates some really good stuff to talk about.
Yeah, I watched you and Kaylee had a section with Anthony Sucharja from Parade. And when I was actually getting ready to meet with him one time, I watched your guys' segment to like learn about him and to learn about like, and I enjoyed watching your guys' interview and it looked like a fun conversation. So I think this stuff is really interesting. Tell me about how you got your show at Sirius, and was that nerve-wracking? Because I could see that like imposter syndrome would probably kick in for me right away. I'd be like super stoked that someone thought about me for a show, but then I'd also be like terrified because I'd be like, oh shit, now I actually have to go like make this thing happen. I'm not worthy.
Yes to a lot of everything you just said. I tell people I feel like a little bit of getting the show is like fate. And when I say that, I'm really big on manifesting what you want in life and where you want your career to go. I've been a Road Dogg fan for a while now. I've been listening to the channel for some time. And I grew up actually, like my dad and his friends are part of some more sports talk shows here locally. So like growing up, my dad would always be on the phone, chatting back and forth. So it's like, I have kind of like experience around, talk radio, et cetera. And especially the Road Dogg channel. Honestly, it was, I guess, shout out to Kevin Hill. We got the offer from Sirius to take over the 2-hour slot from 5 to 7. It's like, to this day, I remember I was driving up north and Kevin Hill called me and I knew that we were working on figuring out what to do with the show, and that we had got it. But I I didn't know who was going to be taking over. And he called me and he's like, hey, we have this radio show. Was it something that you would be interested in doing? And I remember I literally told him, Kevin, I feel like if I told you no, I'd be an idiot. I mean, I know people have gone to school for communications and radio and they work their butt off to have a 4 a.m. slot, right? And on local radio, let alone a slot on SiriusXM during prime time driving.
And gracious rolls right in.
Yeah. And I'm like, you know what? Like, if I tell you no, I'm going to be mad at myself, but I'll tell you, let me sleep on it, but it's going to be a yes. And then in the morning I texted him and said, yeah, let's do this. Now I will say that was a Thursday night. So I like officially said yes on a Friday morning. And my first show was Monday, the next after the weekend. Yeah.
Gosh, and, no time.
Yeah. Like literally serious, like, expedited like the equipment I needed to my house over the weekend. We tested it like Monday morning, and I honestly, like, no direction, just kind of like put together what I would like to see from a show. And overall, I'd say, you know, listen to the Road Dog channel. It's a lot of like talk radio trucker experience on the road. I can't make that up and I can't pretend like I know that. But yeah, what I really wanted to do was create a more news focused show to teach drivers about areas that I know that they had questions on, and to use stuff like sonar, right? Use data to help them understand, you know, the direction of the market and what they should be prepared for, and when to start getting ready for a market downturn, and the opposite, when to start getting ready for the market to of course get back to normal, and what normal meant, and understanding the importance of the demand of inbound containers and what that means for what's going to be available over the road. And I wanted it to be a little bit more, less lifestyle, more business, because I think drivers, a lot of, that's really what they're passionate about, right? It's like running a successful trucking business and being with their families. And mm-hmm. You know, it's funny, even the more that I got into it, I realized that the audience is a lot even more larger than I thought. I mean, there's investors that listen to it. There's 3PLs leadership that listen to it. I remember specifically like when there was some investment I was talking about once, and I got an email like an hour after the show from like one of the partners who was like, I was listening. And I was like, that's, you know, I just assume the audience is a certain type. So
sure.
I will say I was nervous a little, because being a more male dominated industry, I'm like, great. So here's this girl that's going to come in here and tell us how to run our business. and so that was like my biggest nerve, was people were like, who's this chick who's telling us what to do? But the audience has been incredibly open. And there's many times where either emails or people call in are just like, you've taught us so much about this industry. And that's, I think, where my passion comes from in creating content. It's not just, I was a big fan of like Stephen Colbert back in the day, and like the Daily Show. Like you leave those shows, there's humor, you laugh, but you learn something, right? There's always like that segment where you like leave and you, the other show on HBO, right? Like there's always like something new that the host is trying to teach the audience or explore with the audience. And that's my
John goal. Oliver, like, maybe.
John Oliver, yes, that's it, right?
I love John Oliver. He's awesome. I love that British accent. He's, and the writers on that show are just brilliant. Like, and they always teach you about like climate change or some sort of thing that's like going on. So I think that all that stuff is super interesting. How does like the prep work for just out of curiosity, that first weekend when you found out that on a Friday that you had to like do this show like on a Monday, how did you you needed to test some equipment, it sounded like. Did you have like anyone to help you with that, or do you just have to go figure that yourself for one? And then how much time did you spend like prepping, and like how much time do you, I know there's a bunch of questions here, so sorry. And then how much time do you spend prepping like on a regular basis as well?
The equipment wise, that took probably about, it actually like works through like a Zoom connection into their studio in Nashville. So we just had to make sure my internet speed was at a certain level, got that figured out, and we're ready to go. That took probably maybe like an hour most. I think that's a lot of people like don't realize, I'm just like doing it here in the same room every single day. Yeah, no, it's like my family, I'm like, you go to the studio? And I'm like, no, I just, which is kind of nice because at 5 to 7, it's like, I kind of get half the time my PJ is just like ready to go. It's fun doing the show like live in real places because like that's actually a little bit more nerve wracking. You feel so comfortable, right, in your own space.
Sure.
When it comes to prep, honestly, because a lot of it is news driven, usually around 2-3 o'clock, I'll start kind of working on the news portions of the show. So like, for example, like when Yellow was going through a lot, like a lot of that's last minute up to date. So I try between like 2:30 to like 4:30. What's the biggest topics of the day? What do we need to touch on? Getting with our sonar team, figuring out, hey, what are we movement wise? What region should we discuss? What's happening in the markets that I think I need to deliver to the audience? And then I usually try to have 2 guests for each hour. And a lot of times that is, I usually try to prep the week about a week in advance. There's a lot of guests who have monthly spots, so that helps me kind of stay up to date and keep the schedule full as well. But usually I'm usually about a day to, actually more 2 to 3 days ahead of time in regards to like the content. So if there's a special guest coming on, then we work on that ahead of time. On Fridays, I usually spend the second half of the show doing more of like a John Oliver segment. That's usually like, I like to go over, again, business stuff, right? So sometimes weird logistics. So like if there's some type of weird freight moving, or the last one I did was on containers that like fall off ships and like,
oh, geez, that's gnarly.
Like, oceanographers have learned from like watching the movement of those containers and like where some of that freight has like drifted over time, like how that's actually helped create variance. Yeah, right. Like it's so that's like how I kind of spend, like I like to have Fridays like a little bit more fun and focus there. But yeah, usually for me too, I laugh about this because I do like 30-minute podcasts and stuff for Freight Waves and they have this 2-hour show. And in each of those scenarios, I always just like I overplan questions because, you know, sometimes I'm sure you know doing this, like some people are more talkative than others. So like
sure.
One of my favorites is Adam Wingfield. Like I always send Adam like 15 questions and then we end up just ranting about 3 of them usually half the time. So I always over prepare if that means anything.
Oh, but sure. I do too. I'm the same way.
Yeah. 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 Well, it's funny. You send me over the questions. I'm like, love this. Like I wish we could do this in the 40 minutes. It is fun. For me, it's the organic conversation. So a lot of times I try to keep questions very open-ended, not very focused, because you'd be surprised at like what people, especially on the radio, I think there's something about like them knowing their face isn't there, that sometimes they just, and it's on demand. So it's like, you have to purchase Sirius to listen to it. Sometimes people say like wild stuff and I'm like, this is great. This is exactly what I was looking for. So yeah, it depends on, of course, the person, but I'd say about a day or two in advance, I'm planning stuff out.
And then do you get nervous still, or is it different from like radio to, I know that you've hosted stuff at like Freightways events too, in front of a crowd. I think that when we were talking offline, I think that you had to do one with like where Fuller dropped out and you had to like suddenly take over this whole crowd, which to me sounds also terrifying. But, and I think that it's weird because I know that like podcasting and this sort of thing, more than one person is usually listening to it, but for some reason, like having a crowd there and having that pressure just sounds terrifying to me. So like, how did you get through that?
I've never been too fearful of being on stage. I'm not sure where that comes from. I will say growing up, my mother was a theater teacher. And so I never was in the plays, but I was actually like, she would use me as the equipment girl. So I would go help with like light. So I was never like really afraid of speaking in front of people, or even more so just like being on a stage. I get nervous more about the technical stuff. Like I really hate, this sounds so silly, and maybe now if you ever see me, you'll see like how nervous I get. I prefer standing over sitting as like a girl, like trying to cross your legs and stuff. I get more nervous about like, and like I have an ankle tattoo too. So like, I'm always like trying to hide it, like with my foot or like, so that I was like, just telling my mom that this week, like I don't get nervous about like the content or like speaking, but I get nervous about like how I'm like sitting compared to a camera. So like, and when I talk with people and when I interview people, I like to look at them, you know, like face them. So like on a stage, I feel so awkward, like facing forward, but like talking to the side. So you'll watch me. I'm sure you'll see
me now.
Go to like a Freightways event and you're like, she is just like trying to figure it out. And I like to sit up straight. So like, I can't like slouch back and so it's like, I hate that. Again, the technical stuff, even like walking on stage, I'm like, okay, where are the cords at? Like, where am I going to, where could I fall? Like, that's more of like,
where am I going to trip and figure
exactly. Grace, but I have no grace, whatever. And like, I think what makes me comfortable on stage, and I hope people like really consider this too in regards to getting on stage and speaking in front of people, is that like, the more that you're yourself, the more you register with an audience. And
that's so true.
It's so true. And it's like, I always try to like make people laugh, just like I would in like a normal conversation. Like, let's get people to laugh a little bit, relax. Like, we're all here to learn something. And so I always try to like, I'm like a big fan of like dad jokes. I try to fit a dad joke here and there just to like get them going. And I think it also helps me become more comfortable in the situation. But I've also been privileged enough that a lot of speaking situations that I've been in are with people I actually know pretty well, right? So it's like, for example, at CSCMP here in a couple weeks, I'm going to be leading a scheduling standard consortium discussion with Uber Freight, JB Hunt, and Convoy. We're actually like starting the whole conference. So it's like, that's kind of nerve wracking. It's on a little bit bigger room. Very comfortable talking with Dan Lewis, very comfortable talking with Raj from Uber Freight, and very comfortable. I mean, I know like Spencer from JB Hunt. So I'm not even too worried about the discussion or what we'll talk about, because I've covered it a number of times and I know those individuals very well. And that's in the one that you're talking about that I had to like last minute jump into, that was with Michelle from, Triumph Pay. Her and I have been on, we've worked on multiple projects together, right? And it was funny, like even talking with her before, she was nervous. And I'm like, Michelle, we've done 45 minutes of this on the radio. Like, this is only 20. Like, this is going to be easy. So I guess I just enjoy it. I realize that everyone that's speaking on the stage is probably just as nervous as you. So just like, go for it. And as long as you are yourself and you don't feel comfortable with who you're talking about and the topic you're talking about, you're probably going to shine. So just take that lead.
Going back to that one that you're doing in a couple of weeks with the guy from Uber Freight and some of these other execs, how prepared are you going, like off the cuff when you're doing the intro of like, hey, this is like Craig Fuller of FreightWaves, and like, are you reading something from them just to make sure that you hit all of their... Because I think that when you're introducing people, it's kind of hard, or at least for me, to remember all the points, especially if they're like a heavy hitter and all their accolades and whatnot. So I was just curious, do you use like notes too in some cases, or is it just kind of all, everything's off the cuff all the time?
I will, you'll see this too. I have a notebook usually or something with me that I like to write on throughout these things, because it's less about remembering what to talk about, but more about when someone brings something up off the cuff that I think would be great to explore deeper, I write with. I also have like a really, again, down to the technicals, I like don't know what to do with my hands sometimes when I'm in these situations. Like,
sure.
So I like to have something in my hand so I'm not like fidgeting. A lot of times in that notebook, I'll have kind of like, I'll put like five basic questions just in case I get off track. We did do prep for like these ones in particular. So because they are a little bit higher executives and very large companies right in our space, we have certain questions that we're going to hit. And of course we are still taking questions from the audience. So it could, you know, go in a different path from there. But I do enough prep work to at least fully understand the product, what the importance of it. Again, going back to this, part of the reason I do feel so comfortable is because I've done enough research and I've also been in the situations where I understand how valuable that topic is. And for this example, right, the problems that our industry is going to have as it grows with all the different integrations between different scheduling systems and talking with engineers and learning about the difficulties of blending different systems together and how much work goes into it. I understand what the message is that each of these individuals on the panel are likely going to want to relay. So my job is to just facilitate that, right? And kind of like tee up those points for them. And that's where I think I'm able to kind of excel in that space, is knowing if they, because here's the thing that I really try to avoid when I do panels or moderate or do any content, is like, I hate buzzwords. And a lot of times,
Celia,
the higher the executive, the more the buzzwords come out. And I understand why.
Yeah.
But I also know that those individuals often have a really good detailed answer. So like my goal is to like try to get the question so focused that I get that detailed answer and I don't get that buzzword answer. So for me going into this, I'll again have like probably four questions down there, but I know very well what each of these individuals on the panel want. Again, I know them. I've interviewed Dan numerous times, Raj on camera numerous times, Spencer numerous times, and talk to them individually just about their lives and what's going on with them personally, that I'm definitely not afraid of making that connection not work for the audience, right? Like having that kind of welcoming approach to the conversation too. So yeah, there's definitely prep that goes into it, but I think, thank goodness for the job that I do, because I know these people and because I know what their businesses are trying to do, it makes it a little bit easier in that regard.
Yeah. And I think it's also cool, kind of the way to think about it too, like kind of like you mentioned, like you're going to deliver a really interesting, insightful conversation about integrations to the audience. And I actually took like one of my friends actually bought me a ticket to do this, like not comedy, but what is that? Like improv. And I really didn't want to do it. I was like, just not that I have anything against improv. I'm just an introvert. So I just thought that that would be like hard on me. And I ended up doing it. And I remember I was talking to this guy that was in there with like, he worked for Apple as an engineer. And I remember like we were sitting there chatting and I was about to go up next to do like this little skit with someone that I didn't know. And I was like, I don't really understand these instructions to the guy, same as David. He's like, I'm a little bit nervous to go up there. And he's like, Jeremy, it's not about you. It's about the group. Get over yourself. And I was like, damn. And it's interesting because like, I feel like just like these little reframes of like, I don't know, like when I'm in my own head, it's like, if I make it about the group, it seems a little bit like easier on myself for some reason, because it's not about me, I guess. So that's kind of one thought. But then the other thing too is, what about people that, or businesses, freight brokerages, software companies, whatever, what it might be, that are thinking about starting a podcast, like what advice do you have for them? Like, as far as like, do you recommend it, getting their feet wet, or do you think that it is worth exploring?
I definitely think it's worth exploring. I would say, I mean, you know this, you really only need, you could start off with Zoom. We use Riverside at FreightWaves as well. I think it's StreamYard's another one, but and you could easily get Zoom and record from there at the very basic tools. So I think the infrastructure and like the operations of it aren't too, when you talk about ROI, right, there's really not much to it. It's time that we're talking about. I would also suggest like coming out, and this is where like FreightWaves, I'm very blessed to kind of enter this world through FreightWaves and get a lot of this advice from our producers and media team as well. Come out with like a schedule and a plan before you start it. Make sure that you know, have guests lined up so that you aren't just coming out with one and then like months later, another one. Like, have a schedule that you're going to stick to so that your audience, right, can start seeing you on a certain basis and get used to. Plus, I think that helps drive social media content, right, to see postings up every 2 weeks or every week, et cetera. That's something Blythe Brumley has helped me understand as well, is like, be especially like a podcast, stuff like that, start bringing people in months in advance so that you aren't just trying to rush to get someone on the show, and then you can spend time actually thinking about the content. This is the one thing I would say, is like, look inside your office and who are the people that just like really are perfect examples of your culture and your values, right? we all know that there's a team, and a lot of times they're going to be entry level, right? They're not going to be your C-level person. They're not going to be, you know, always a manager. But the people that you come in and are like, that's like our mascot right there. We know that if today's a down day, that person is going to rally everyone up organically without someone asking them to do so. Give that person some time on air, right? Like, use those people to your advantage. Also, like, see who's in your office that's like passionate about this. I think one of my biggest pet peeves, and something I learned just being helping to grow a business and being in a startup position, is like, a lot of times there's people who outside of work are creating content or are becoming photographers or are let's say like creating their own music. Like, we had the business I was at, we had like one of our interns was like really into photography. So it's like, why not bring them in and do headshots? Like, leverage some of these people's passions outside of work, inside of work, and see how much more loyal and how much that builds culture too. So don't think that you have to immediately hire someone outside of your company to help start a podcast. They could help, you know, and they might offer some work, but start organically. Like, just use the people that drive success in your business organically and authentically, and put them in front of a camera and see what happens. And I think, again, add Zoom to it, and you'd be surprised how quickly you could get that endeavor going.
Yeah, 100%. And especially too, like, I just love learning from other people like yourself. I mean, when else am I going to get a chance to talk to someone that has your specific experience with all like the radio and like podcasting and everything like that? So to me, it's almost like getting like your own Audible episode of a book or something that you're creating. So I don't know. I think the whole thing is pretty fascinating. I do want to talk to you a little bit too about like ROI. Like, I don't have a ton of experiences myself of like connecting. I know that we've obviously closed deals as a result of the podcast and small deals and things like that. But one of my friends, Cargo Margo, she had came on our show like right when we first started, and she actually closed the deal. It was like $3.5 million from like her 1 hour weekly show that my buddy Travis produced for her. It's like a weekly live show. So I was like blown away when I saw that she actually had that much success. It was made me super happy, but I was just wondering, do you have any other anecdotal things of either ROI success or just things in general? I don't know, free stuff or trips or anything that is a result of you podcasting?
Well, you know, I will say, look at what Freightways is doing. I mean, I think that's the bottom line in the work that is showcasing today. I mean, we look at the different brands that we work with and the content that we're able to create and the connection to audiences that we're able to create as well. I mean, that's literally worth something. That's what a part of our business is, right? Take out the sonar side, but still, like, people utilize FreightWaves as a way to reach those audiences and to obviously close deals likely as well. I mean, there's a lot of people that I think customers wise see the content that FreightWaves puts out, and that drives them to reach out to individuals about the technology that they're using or whatever concept or guest was on that show that week. And I think there's that showcases like what's really driving FreightWaves and the increase of our audience and the different work that we're able to do, even down to like our Freight Tech 100, right? Like, there's a reason we're doing that. And there's a reason why companies like being on that list, because it's a way of showcasing like that all the sites that are industry driven. Like, here's a list of the top people and top providers you should be looking at. And so I think just looking at FreightWaves and what we've been able to create and build is a perfect example of that. I will say, I think, you know, what's really surprised me is how many people are a fan of the work that I've done. And one of my like favorite, I hope he sees this. If not, I'll send it to him. One of my like favorite people of all time was Mark Manduka of, he just started working in Bradley Jacobs equity firm, but he was GXO's chief investment officer. And he actually did, like, now that I think I think he messaged me for it, but he asked for my number once, and he called me, and he was like, you know, I just want to say, like, I'm a huge fan. I've seen all of your point of sale episodes, and I think the work that you're doing is incredible. And if there's anything I can help with, like, let me know. And like,
dang, that's awesome.
And at the end of the day, it's like, I literally was like, your dad's Paul Manduka. Like, he's part of like Prudential. Like, you know, it's like some of these individuals, I'm like, I shouldn't be on your radar, you know? So it's like, and like, you're calling me right now and asking for advice. And so it's like, those different, and he's, again, like, Mark, if you're watching this, like, you've been just absolutely incredible. And he's been just a loyal, I don't like saying fan, because that sounds just arrogant, I guess. But like, I guess for me, just someone I can lean on, and someone who can, you know, offer advice in this space, who does incredible work for the industry as a whole. So I think that's what's been crazy for me, is like the people who have watched the show and who have appreciated, and even down to, I mean, honestly, there's people who have 1 to 2 trucks that have reached out to me and said like, hey, you know, I was listening to this episode and it was just what you said was incredible, and I started doing that in my business and it worked perfectly. Or there's a lot of people on Great Quarter Gals that we bring on, and I really try to find small, medium-sized business leaders for that show. And larger companies have reached out to me and said, hey, we started working with this individual and it's just been absolutely incredible. That, I think, is what I love, bringing people together. I love creating like a community, and I love, at the end of the day, like, helping others succeed in their endeavors. And so, sure, I would love, no, I haven't ever gotten like trips or anything like that from anything that I'm working on, but it's allowed me to build a very potentially lucrative, but just incredible network of individuals that I can reach out to and say, hey, like, what are your thoughts on this general area of technology, or what are you working on, and vice versa. Like, they will reach out to me too. So that, I think, is when you talk about ROI, like, consider that, like, consider the fact that there's probably shippers out there that you don't know of, customers out there that you don't know of, who will see an episode and will say, you know what, I want to work with that company.
Yeah, I love that. And I think that your network too, it's just one of those things too, where you'll never really probably ever have to worry about finding a gig either. Cause I feel like you have such a big network now that, like, you ever need somewhere to work, it's not going to be very hard for you to go find like a gig, which I think is also super awesome. I wanted to ask you a little bit too about like how you deal with like feedback. Let's just say it's like good or bad. I try to like ride in the middle as far as like feedback goes, cause I know that sometimes if someone compliments me, that's awesome. But it, you know, sometimes people say stuff that's not so nice at times as well. So I'm just curious how you deal with your feedback.
That's a really great question. I think as an individual, I talked to my therapist about this too. It's funny. My growing up, like, I constantly was like looking for like feedback. Like, I was a perfectionist, like, in everything that I do. Like, how could it be better? What am I doing wrong? Like, I think it's a little bit of our generation as well, just in general. It's like, yeah, like, if we just grew up in this like or dislike type of world. And so if we don't have any likes, I mean, I'd rather have at least a dislike than like no feedback, you know, at the end of the day. For me, I would love more. I think more feedback. I think that's where I'm getting. Like, I'd love for people to reach out and like, let me know maybe areas that we could work on touching on more at Freight Waves. If there's one of my favorite things to do, and you've probably seen it, Reed, right, has started this huge Discord. Reed from, you've probably seen the Please Advise hats that are like over my shoulder right here. We have this giant Discord, and especially when it comes to technology in this space, there's so many different players that I truly like. Let me know about the companies that you're working with that maybe we've never reported on before that are doing good work, because I love finding new companies to talk to. And a lot of times I'll lean on like these Reddit groups or Discord groups and say like, hey, like, who's someone really cool that, you know, we haven't reported on there that's bringing some value to your business, so I can, you know, reach out to them and learn more. I think that's in the work that I do every day, like, that just meeting people and growing that network is really important to me. Negative feedback wise, it's weird to say I would love more in my life, but I think maybe to flip that a little bit is like, I do love watching other people's content and seeing what others are maybe attracted to or gravitate towards, and trying to learn something from that. I think in this space in general, right, there's so many different people that are entering the content game, and you could sit back and say they don't deserve it, or you could say like, oh well, what expertise do they have that they're, but at the end of the day, they're building a network, they're building an audience, and there's something that you can learn from that. I like to try to kind of explore new upcoming maybe content creators in this space and try to, you know, maybe pull from what they're doing or see what guests are they're bringing on, and learn that way too. So, but, you know, here's the thing for everyone listening. We've moved all of our content to YouTube. I go through every single night and I literally go through like all the comments from the day before and like try to learn from that. So if you see one of our, my videos or one of my podcasts, like on there, and you're, and leave a comment. Let us know who you'd like to see on there, or maybe topics that we haven't touched on, because I literally do go through those, not to like get the positive comments, but to see if there's, you know, feedback that I can take in and think about for future guests.
Yeah, I love that. I think that getting comment or the feedback from the comments kind of it'll help you to figure out what you want to talk about, maybe episodes and different ideas. So I love that. My last question for you, and I'm just curious to see if you have, I know that I've personally learned a lot through my podcasting journey, like editing through like Premiere Pro or Adobe Audition, like Riverside, different condenser mic, dynamic, whatever, like Rodecaster Pro. So I've definitely learned a ton, even how to write better, I feel like, and formulate my thoughts and speak and whatnot. So I'm just curious, like, what about you on your end? Like, what do you feel like podcasting has taught you, or like what skills have you leveled up as a result of it?
You know, it's funny because you sent this question and I was really thinking about one. I will say I'm very grateful for how I've entered this space, because again, I'm able to, when it, you list all of the editing and stuff, I don't really have to do any of that. I have an incredible team that helps with it. I have a social media team that can create clips mm-hmm. for me. I'm very blessed to enter this space and just kind of show up with the content, and they help with the, like, as long as I can bring B-roll and stuff like that, you know, like they'll, I don't have to worry about putting that out myself. So again, that's where I think I'm blessed. But when I did see this question, I was like, there's gotta be something, and I'll tell you what it is. And I've learned it more through radio. And I think that's because you can't see my lips. You can't see visually. The Midwest does have an accent, and I've learned more and more over the last like year of like how to articulate myself better. Like a perfect example is like the Midwest. Sometimes if we get comfortable in our discussion, like a lot of times if I go on like a little rant or tangent, we start to blur words together. Like for example, if someone's saying like, did you go eat somewhere? Like a lot of times in the Midwest, we said like, jeet, like did you eat? And it's like, I've never noticed it before. Another one that we do apparently, like, as we call like the DMV, like the Secretary of State, and it's Secretary of State, you know, but like we like blend everything that people sometimes like my producer for SiriusXM, him and I mean we hang out every day, and so like we have a very close relationship, and he'll like get on me sometimes like, the hell did you just say? And I'm like, I just said this. He's like, swear to God, you just swore. And I was like, I definitely didn't. So I think really articulating and like realizing to maybe slow myself down sometimes. And I notice it when I get angry, if I like get really like angry and like intense about a situation, that's when it gets like much worse. But
that's funny.
Like, it is, it's funny because I'm like, whatever you're, but I listen to myself back and I'm like, oh my God, it's so bad. So
I know what you mean though. There's one, my mom was making fun of me because she was listening to like one of our episodes one time. And I think I say like, instead of saying four, I say fur or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Just stupid stuff like that. Or like, I'll start noticing other people's speech patterns too. A lot of times people will say, and like, they'll just have like these weird things that they'll add in between their thoughts instead of like just pausing. Yeah. They'll just have like this weird filler thing going on. But I think it's as a result of listening to so much audio, I feel like I agree with you. Like my enunciation on certain things, like it's hard. Sometimes I have to slow myself down as well, because I'll say some words and it's completely butchered the way I pronounce it, or I'll even have to like stay away from certain words because I'm like, I can't pronounce that word very well.
It's funny. There's we use it so much in this industry, it drives me nuts. And I'm like getting, my producer like makes fun of me at Sirius because like he can hear me sounding it out, but I hate the word volatile. Even just like looking at it, like a lot of times if I see it, like in, if I write like scripts or anything, I'll just say, I'll just like literally say like changes so much, you know, like I'll avoid saying the word in particular. It's an inside joke that if I say it like the volatility, like I hate that word. It's freight. So it's like impossible to not run into that word like three times a week.
Every day.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the big one where I'll get off in the commercial and my producer Gerard will be like, "You did it. Good job." And I'm like, "Yeah, I killed it." So no, I'm radio. And I think it's, again, just because it's my voice only is like the first thing that really started to recognize it more. Another example is like, and I have to like stop myself every time, there's Charlotte, North Carolina, right? There's a city in Michigan that I'm not far, that everyone knows, we call it Charlotte. So like, that's like another one too, where I'll be like, Charlotte, you know, like have to like go out of my way to say it correctly. So that's the big one. I remember being in an event when I was younger and someone was like, "You have a weird accent." I was like, "What are you talking about? Like, you're an idiot." Now I'm like, "Oh, it's there, and we're getting over it slowly and surely."
Oh my gosh, that was a fascinating conversation, Grace. I love that. It was super fun. Where do I send people if they want to learn more about you?
You can find me on LinkedIn, Twitter. I'm laughing because I was going to say just Google Grace Sharkey, and honestly, I do come up right away. But that sounds arrogant. Yeah, I know it is fantastic, but it sounds arrogant. So
I mean, you worked for it though, so I feel like, you know, it's not arrogant. You've worked for it.
Yeah, touche. So yeah, if you go to any of like my social media sites, I also have a Linktree account that will get you to all of my podcasts, a link to the SiriusXM show, all of that too. Of course, check out FreightWaves every day. A lot of the work I do is there. Check out our YouTube page. And again, leave us feedback. Let us know you want to listen to. But yeah, you'll find me on everything except for TikTok. I haven't gotten into it yet, but I'll slowly get into it, I guess.
I'm with you. We're both on the same TikTok lagging thing. Yeah. Well, thanks so much for the time, Grace.
No, thank you. And keep up the good work. I love the show.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Thanks for sticking around to the end of that episode with Grace Sharkey over at FreightWaves. I hope you enjoyed the episode. It's always great to talk to other podcasters and people that deal with being in the spotlight and in front of big crowds, because that seems terrifying to me. So, and also the fact that Grace just got the show with Kevin Hill and was able to pull it off over a weekend is pretty awesome. I'm going to be at FreightWaves F3 in November. So if you are at FreightWaves, definitely say hi and let's catch up. And we actually just had our first 3PL live event take place. We're not event planners, but we pulled it off. It was awesome getting to see all of our partners and then all of our staff all in one place, including our customers. So we had a great time. Anyways, hope everyone's doing well, and we will catch you on the next episode. Thanks so much.